Good morning. Thank you all for coming. We're studying the use of social networks in addition to sexual networks to find additional cases of gonorrhea and syphilis. I want to acknowledge and thank my co-authors, Anne Rampallo, who's here, whose idea it was, and everybody else who analyzed and cleaned the data. As everyone knows, it's a very old idea that you want to trace the contacts of people who have syphilis, as shown by the pages of this yellowing book of from 1937, that one person can be responsible for a lot of different cases. But obviously, there's a big incentive not to report accurately. In the best of circumstances, it's very hard to get people to reveal sensitive information on surveys. For example, in face-to-face interviews, it's a lot harder. Even relatively normal behavior like dieting and exercising to lose weight are reported in smaller amounts in face-to-face interviews than in self-administered surveys or computer surveys. There's also very high, I've done a lot of work in behavior identity discrepancies, and obviously there's a lot of problematic self-report there, that when people have an identity that's different from their behavior, they won't report their behavior accurately. So although there's a lot of work in survey research to improve the accuracy of reporting, these are all mostly for anonymous survey contexts. The process of STI contact tracing is the worst of the worlds in some senses, that you have face-to-face interviews often, although not inevitably. You want to elicit names and contact information, very specific information, and it often includes behaviors that clash with people's public identities, that, for instance, somebody might have a main female partner and have many male partners on the side that are not part of their public identity, and so these don't get reported. So this study elicits this type of hidden information using non-stigmatized information, and the goal is to try to identify more total cases of syphilis and gonorrhea. The subjects are Baltimore STD clinics who are diagnosed with syphilis and gonorrhea, and they were interviewed to find their social and sexual networks. The social contacts were found with a range of questions, about 15 to 20 questions, asking about the kinds of sources of social support that people have in their lives. So if you had to borrow $25 or something valuable, who would lend it to you? Or if you had something important to talk about, who would you talk about it with? Who do you eat meals with? Who do you go out drinking with? Who would lend you money to go to the doctor? Who would drive you to the doctor? All of these different things indicate important people with an important role in the patient's lives, but don't necessarily have any threatening sexual, don't have any sexual connotation at all. And after that, they were asked, who of these people have you had sex with? And that allowed them to then identify people, but they could choose not to identify the people as well. And then the people that they named were asked to participate in the study. There was obviously an incentive for getting the people to participate. They were paid not just for the interview, but they were paid $10 for each of the contact that enrolled in the study. And we also linked people if they named the same person going by their name and address. So if Jim and Bob both named somebody named Susan White who lived at 123 Pratt Street, we would say that's the same person, and we would link Jim and Bob even if Susan didn't identify them as connected to each other. So the data analysis package I used is called iGraph. It's done within the R statistical package, and it was amazing. It worked on Macintosh, and it was free, and it did really nice data display, and it also let me do statistics within the same package without having to transfer the data back and forth. And I'm just telling you all this because I know people are always looking for good data analysis packages for social networks, and I found this to be very, very nice to use. The analysis done, first it was cleaned in Excel extensively, it was plotted initially using PIEC by my co-author Jackie Jennings, and then I used our iGraph. We only looked at the people who had connections, and then we plotted the data, and then we found associations to quantify what we found in the in the plots using exponential random graph models, also called p-star models. So just to show you what our subject pool is comprised of, we have, this is the age distribution of the people, that most of the people are about in their early 20s and their early 40s. There's a slight difference that the gonorrhea patients are a little younger than the syphilis and neither, and the people without any STDs. They mostly, in the past 2 months, they mostly had just one partner, but the people with STDs had slightly more. Most of them are high school educated, but some didn't graduate from high school, and some were in two-year programs, and there was no educational difference based on who got diagnosed with an STD. Now this is our network, and I'm going to go through it component by component more specifically, but just to give you an idea, this is how many isolates we had. We had about 200 people that we had to exclude because they didn't have any contacts enrolled in the study. So excluding them, you can see that here the black arrows represent a social connection, and the red represent a sexual connection. In other words, the black arrows wouldn't have been there at all if it weren't for these unusual questions to ask about social context. So you can see the predominance of black in this graph. In fact, there are a lot of components that wouldn't even be there. That, for instance, you notice there's this enormous one right here, and that would not be there at all if we hadn't asked social questions. And then we have this enormous component right here, and it wouldn't have been connected if it weren't for social connections. So asking social questions really gives us bigger networks, it gives us more participants, and it gives us a lot of network components that wouldn't have been present at all if we weren't asking about the social connections in addition to sexual. And then this is just saying exactly what it was, that we had 528 people, of whom about 329 had connections, and then that's about twice as many as we would have had if we had just asked sexual questions. Now looking at gender, a lot of the components that we have are, we get by asking about social connections, we get a lot more same gender social networks. That these red boxes indicate, these are all lots of men that are connected to each other, that as you can see, the green indicate a social connection, and those wouldn't have been there if we hadn't been asking the social questions. If we had only been asking sexual questions, these are the only cases of sexual connections between people of the same gender. And you'll see that we have four same-sex, or four men who have sex with men, and we have three women who have sex with women. And those were the only sexual connections that we found. And in a population of about 300, we would expect maybe more than that. So that's why it's useful to have asked the social questions. An additional thing that's useful for asking the social questions is that we have these two relationships where one person said it was a sexual relationship and the other person did say that there was a relationship, but they called it a social relationship. So so it's only two, but there's a case where we're getting some more information that we wouldn't have otherwise. Now to look at the STDs. Here I've shown the syphilis cases in red, and the green edges are the social connections. So if we'd asked just the sexual connections, we would have done a pretty good job. These are all the cases we would have found just by asking the sexual partners. And this is great. We have lots of cases of syphilis just this way, by asking about sexual connections. But when we ask about social connections as well, we get an additional several, including two where there are three people all in a row who have syphilis. So it's really nice that by asking social connections, we don't get quite as many as with sexual, but we get different ones, and we get more than we would have had, almost twice as many. Now, to break it down by what kinds of relationships these are, here I've shown the males as squares and the women as women as circles, and in some cases, the additional cases of syphilis identified through social connections are same sex. So it doesn't mean that these people are having sex. It's possible that they just have similar sexual practices. But we'll see here that there's this square here in the middle where the four people, one of them is a woman with a sexual connection to a man, and there are two additional men attached to him socially, potentially, or possibly sexually, that is not being revealed. In addition, there are a few more same gender men with men, And then there are a few with social connections between men and women that both of them are found to have syphilis and they're identified. So there seems to be a pretty even balance in whether the additional cases of syphilis identified through asking social questions, whether they're same gender and whether they're opposite gender. Now looking at gonorrhea, here we have fewer gonorrhea cases. There were 101 cases of syphilis and there are only 67 cases of gonorrhea, so you can see there aren't as many. This is really interesting and I don't understand it. We have 4 cases only of gonorrhea that are identified through referral. It's only 4. And when we ask social connections, we get 6. So in other words, we're getting more contacts of gonorrhea by asking social connections than we were when we were just asking for sexual. So in other words, being a social contact of somebody with gonorrhea gives you, on average, a higher chance of having gonorrhea than being a sexual contact of somebody with gonorrhea, which may say something either about the kinds of relationships that are being disclosed. It's possible that these relationships just weren't being disclosed as sexual and they really were sexual, or maybe it's just that the behavior is very similar. And again, looking at seeing whether these are opposite sex or same sex, only one of them of the cases where they have a social connection and they both have gonorrhea, only one of them is same sex males and males. The other 5 are opposite sex males and females together. So, overall, when we include the social connections, we get not only more individuals, we get more connected individuals, we get bigger networks, we have these big networks that can stretch out where we can see a lot of different things that get components that get connected together by these social connections, and we have more same-sex connected individuals that looking at sexual connections mostly lets us study opposite sex partners. There aren't very many same-sex sexual partners being reported. We directly find 12 syphilis cases and 6 gonorrhea cases. Now to quantify this, this is the PSTAR model that finds that somebody with a sexual contact who has syphilis has 2.2 times as likely to have syphilis themselves. And for social contacts, as we expect, they have a lower likelihood of getting of having syphilis. It's only about 30% more likely to have syphilis if they have a social context, which makes sense because they're not having sex with all of the people that they, all if any of the people that they name as social contacts. Mirroring what we saw about gonorrhea, that only 4 people get identified as the sexual partners of somebody with gonorrhea, we get an odds ratio of about even, that somebody who has a sexual contact who has gonorrhea is about equally likely to themselves have gonorrhea as if they don't. But somebody who has a social contact with somebody with gonorrhea has a 1.5 times as likely to have gonorrhea themselves. And that's reflected that we found more gonorrhea cases through the social context than through the sexual context. So we're concerned about, there's not really a very good, for social networks, there isn't a very good notion of response rate, that you can't just take all the referred people and divide it and get the response rate. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to see whether there is maybe a difference in the number of contacts that report back, that of the people that are referred, how many people report back, and is that related to the person that referred them? And I found that there was no connections with any of them, with any of these traits, that you would think that maybe somebody who goes to their partner and says, look, I have syphilis and I want you to go participate in a study, they'll give you $10. You know, they might not get so many people coming to the study to participate. And in fact, that's not true. In fact, people's partners are equally, and social contacts are equally likely to participate in a study whether or not they were diagnosed with syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia, or HIV. So that's really nice. That means that we don't have any detectable biases, at least on these factors, in follow-up by the contacts. So in sum, self-report is a known problem for many different kinds of sensitive information, and that's especially true in non-anonymous situations. When we ask social contacts, we can allow STI cases to reveal information that might be very sensitive that they would otherwise want to conceal without compromising their privacy. So a second thing that it allows us to do is to get people who have possibly similar behavior. So even if they don't have, even if these, they're not just hiding that they have a sexual relationship with these people though, are birds of a feather flock together, these people probably have similar types of habits and they may be more likely to have diseases. So either way, if they're having sex with them or if they're not having sex with them and they're just similar in behavior, they, it's helpful in allowing them to get more people involved. And future research can reveal whether this is actually useful to do in a clinical setting, whether this, whether it's cost effective. I've spoken with a few physicians about whether you could actually ask people these questions, whether, you know, a health educator, for instance, could sit down with somebody and ask not only for their sexual context, but their social context without being told that it's none of their business. But, you know, it's certainly useful in theory. If this could be done in practice, that would be wonderful. So thank you. Does anybody have any questions? We each pointed at a different person. Okay, here. In this case, most of these are Most of these are opposite sex partners, so it's possible, it seems more likely that with same sex, you would have more direct transmission, or this indirect transmission, rather, than with opposite sex, and these are mostly opposite sex. Ann, did you have something to add?
No, I have a question.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at this graph here, we have a few graphs. That certainly there are some people where there's multiple people, for instance, with syphilis in the same cluster. But here, for instance, we have this huge cluster of people that are all directed towards one person with syphilis, but they're the only one that has it. And likewise, there's this. There's a few others where there's relatively large component sizes where there's only one person with syphilis. Now, does it harm people to actually give people unnecessary antibiotics this large of a group? I that's not my area, but I think it's an interesting question. Yeah. That's an interesting question. I haven't done the three-way where we have also the age incorporated with the gender. That's a really interesting thing to look at. Is it possible that the younger people are possibly more unreliable about whether they're reporting something as sexual or social? That's a really interesting question, and I'll look at that. Yeah, Dr. Aral?
So great presentation. Thank you very much. Thinking about why social contacts are so important, and sometimes even more important than sexual contact. I'm reminded of some work which I don't think is yet published, but it's probably soon going to be published by Jackie Jennings and your group. They have run Baltimore, right? Which shows tremendous geographic or spatial clustering of morbidity. So that's one. The other thing is, we know we are not getting at all of the sexual contact. We are not getting all of the social contact either. So the social contacts actually are functioning, I think, as an indicator of being in the same sociosexual environment, having sex with people from the same practices. As a result, I would kind of expect social contacts to be even better in finding cases than sexual.
That's a really interesting idea. That could very well be that because the social contacts are more likely to come from the same sector of subsector of society, they may be more predictive than sexual contacts, who may come more less proximate. Yeah. Yeah? Interesting point, but we have to be concerned most of all about the isolates. That remember, I started out with 200 people that I just took out. because they didn't report, because they did, none of their contacts came back. They actually did, everybody named contacts. It's just a question of whether the contacts actually came back to participate in the study. But certainly it can be argued that the ones who had no contacts come back to participate in the study are maybe in some ways more less reliable in partner communication, for example, and they could be more at risk. And that's a really interesting question. I haven't compared the two groups of people who were isolates and people who weren't isolates as far as, I don't think I did anyway, whether they had different characteristics, but that's a very good point. Other questions? Okay, well, thank you.